Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and here is the third of these new kinds of episodes we're doing. Our stories told live on stage in front of an audience, and our radio-style stories recorded privately with music and sound design, they're still in the mix. But recently, we've added episodes like this one, where someone tells me a story, like friends share stories over a cup of coffee or a beer. Jean Ann LeBec lives in my neighborhood, so when she pitched me this story, I suggested she just come on over. She is a favorite of ours on the podcast going way back, and I love how much this recording feels like two friends hanging out, because it is. I'll say more about Jean later, but for now, here is Jean Ann LeBec with me in my echoey living room with a story we call Sex After 70. Okay, so let's hear this story again. When did this happen? This was pretty recent.
Very, and it happened in March, like March, because it was rainy and cold. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, yeah, set me up. Like, where were you? Because I know you were at a place in life where it had been a while since your marriage broke up.
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
And talk to me a little bit, because you were talking about like what that was like at your age.
Yeah. So I met my husband in the 70s, and we were both products of the sexual revolution, you might say. You know, birth control pills had come out. And while we didn't use words like binary or trans or fluid, we were. And we didn't know the names, how to name it. So I loved sex, and I was I experimented a lot. I had female lovers. I had male lovers. I did have a very strong relationship with one woman, and we became lovers for, I would say, at least 5 or 6 years. So when I met Marcel, he also had his own coming of age through this time, because we're only a year apart. And my relationship sexually with him was wonderful, because we both love sex. So we really shared that together. I was willing to experiment with him, and he helped me with my body a lot, because he was very much into, we could be naked and let's enjoy each other, let's go to nude beaches. So I became much more confident in myself as a woman, because he loved my body so much that I became very confident. So sex was a very, very big part of our marriage.
But you were pretty monogamous in the marriage, right?
We were, but we had our little interludes with other people, not separately. I mean, well, I found out he did, but we were monogamous. But when he left, it never occurred to me in a million years that I would have absolutely no sex for 6 years.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a shocking. I mean, I remember laying in bed going, oh my God, like just touching my own body and feeling all the changes in my own body as a 76-year-old woman now. And wondering, not only did I not expect that I would be living this celibate life that I never asked for, but that who would be attracted to me now?
Right, right. That whole thing that, like, I'm a hypersexual person, as you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the age of 54, I'm like, okay, this is clearly not going anywhere. This was in me from day one when I was in diapers, from reports on my behavior when I was in diapers. And it's still here today. So I'm like, wow, I have to think of the future because society is not so very well set up to condone or support people who are older having sex lives.
Having sex. And the thing about getting older, so I'm 76, but inside I'm not. I mean, inside I'm just me. But the world doesn't see me as me. The world sees me as a 76-year-old woman.
Right.
And it's the oddest thing. So you're basically invisible in the world as far as someone flirting with you. I do not walk down the block the way I did, let's say 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And I know, like, I'm doing my thing, you know.
Right.
They call me Little Mama. It's like, hi, Little Mama. And I'm like, ugh. I'm not your little mama. I don't want to be a little mama. Can I be a hot mama? You know, like I'm a little mama. So it's like, So, and I did go online. I can make a list of guys over the 6 years that I had different kinds of interactions with. But when they're your age, you know, sometimes they want to text you till you get to the point of sex texting. And you think, oh, this is hot. You get into this thing and then you go, so when do you want to meet? And they're gone. Or you do go out with them. And I met this guy and he had his pillow with him. And he literally put his meds on the table before dinner came. And I was just like, no, I can't. No.
Right.
No. And it's not like I'm judgmental because obviously, you know, but it's not sexy. So I wasn't really turned on to any of the men that I did have different interactions with. Some of them were very sweet and nice, but there was no urgent, nothing sexy. You know?
Yeah. And 6 years in, how were you feeling?
You know, I didn't know if my sadness came from the loneliness of being alone or my sadness came from the realization that this may be it.
Right, right.
And while I enjoy being my own lover, and while on Instagram it's like, you've got this girl and you can move on. And yeah, but you just want to like, fuck. And you just want to like, to be touched again. And then I think, does my body even work anymore? Mm. What is my body? You become very separate from your body without sex. Mm-hmm. You don't realize how much sex has to do with the integration of who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And without that, you begin to feel like, you know, wow, what do I look like in the world? What do I look like to me?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the reasons I always feel like the world is so fucked up is because so many people are not aware of the full extent of their sexualities and don't actually explore it. I think people are, by societal strictures, stuck in boxes and think it has to be this way or it has to be that way. And thus, the limits that they put on themselves about the amount of exploration they end up doing keeps them from discovering a lot of just what they're capable of, who they are, and what life can be.
Exactly. And it's interesting speaking to women my age and women who are married my age who have stopped having sex and even sleep in separate rooms. And they'll say things to me like, oh, my goodness, I put that away a long time ago. You're not really. And I'd be like, why? Why did you put it away? I mean, I love dressing up when there's an expectation. I love peacocking for somebody. Yeah. You know, that's part of the fun, you know, right? Right?
Yes, it's I love like getting the apartment. Like, if I didn't
you know what I mean? Right?
The apartment would be such a mess
all the time.
but when you're getting it ready and you're, you know, and I keep my apartment ready all the time. I keep it ready for a lot of things. Living alone, I keep it ready so that my kids come in and I'm dead, I'm neat. Mm. You know, they don't see anything. So I have like little pajamas on, and I even go to bed kind of like, well, if it happens tonight, you know, the apartment will be clean. It'll be in and out here in 2 hours and I'll be clean and wearing a little pretty nightgown like, oh, look at little mommy. Not like, oh my God, mom. You know, like, I've prepared for that, you know. Every time I leave, I go, well, if I die and they come in, I don't want them to see my joints all over the place or the empty wine bottle or, you know, everything's going to look like, look at this woman. She really handled herself. She really had it together, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So tell me about this evening out at a restaurant.
Okay, so we were all meeting, the entire family, and there were about 12 of us to have a luncheon with actually my first husband, who I'm very good friends with, who is the father of my daughter, the biological father. And he just invited everybody to have this luncheon. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking into the restaurant, standing like greeting us is this very tall, very slender man wearing a black shirt, tucked into black slacks with white, shockingly thick hair brushed back off his face and this wonderful trimmed mustache with these glowing blue eyes. Mm. And I looked at him and he looked at me and something definitely happened. Mm. And he just said, welcome. And it was the way he said, welcome. I was done. I was simply done. I immediately went to the bathroom to look at how I looked because I didn't want to have old lady rouge on, you know. I wanted to. So, you know, we finally were all sitting down and he's taking our orders and everybody.
So he was the waiter?
He was the waiter, but he was like the head waiter. Uh-huh. So he was making sure that we all understood what the specials might be.
Like the maitre d'.
The maitre d'. Yes, definitely. Like, and I was just, and my daughter is staring at me and she kind of goes like this to her husband, like, and I look at them and they go, you like the waiter? And I go, stop. I don't like the waiter. So they go, well, he likes you. I go, no one likes anybody. He's a waiter. We're here. And meanwhile, though, I'm definitely loving the waiter. So we order these appetizers. And that, you know, if you order something like scallops, you're 12 people, you only get like a little bit of scallops. Well, this waiter is cutting them up. So we would precisely, all of us, have scallops. But I got, everyone insisted that I got the most scallops, you know, because he kept coming around to me and he kept coming around to me. I could barely listen to the conversation. You know, wine is flowing, drinks are flowing, and everybody knows. And it's adding this element of excitement. The table, as we're getting drunker and drunker, and the waiter is more and more visible. It's getting like this frenzy.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
You know,
the pressure's on. The whole family wants you to make it with this waiter.
And so dinner, of course, is coming to an end. And John, Amy's husband, looks at me and says, I have to find out. I said, look, somebody like that who's so well put together, he's got to be married or involved in somebody. Don't. He goes, no. So her husband picks himself up and disappears. But he comes back 10 minutes later. He goes, he's not married. He goes, here's the deal. He goes, he was married to a woman for like 20 years who died of cancer. And then he had a girlfriend for about 8 years who also died. That's all I know, but he's single. So I go, okay, but I'm not, like, I'm like, and at the table, Fred's going, leave her alone, stop. Some people go, no, let's go talk to the waiter. So I'm like, who are these crazy family members? And all, suddenly I see my daughter get out of her seat and go up to him. And they're talking and exchanging things. I'm like, no. So I run up and I go, you have to excuse my crazy drunk family. You really do. I so apologize for them. So he looks and he goes, no, this is the way it's done. He goes, here's my number. My name is Mark. You'll never find me on Facebook or any social media. And I'm the kind of person that rarely has my cell phone with me. He goes, and you might want to rethink this because my wife died of cancer. And then I was involved with a woman for 12 years who also died of cancer. So I just started laughing, and then he started laughing, and it was that. So
wow.
I walked out of there with this telephone number.
The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way. And so I had two more days at Amy's house, and he calls me. And we just talked, like, it was so much fun. He was, you know, my age, a little younger than me, actually, 69. Uh-huh. But we talked a lot. And he talked a lot about his wife, and he talked about his girlfriend. But he didn't get, wasn't maudlin or anything. So he said, what do you think? Do we want to go out on a date? So I said, I would love to go out on a date. So it didn't happen then because I had to go home. And in Brooklyn, we called all the time. And it was fun things. Like, he would tell me stories about how his father built stilts for him. And my father had built stilts for me. Those were the days. We shared those days playing outside. At one point, I said something like, I keep forgetting to buy coffee. And he goes, you need to tie a string around your finger. So I go to visit Amy, and we go out on a date. And it had to be the most lovely date. He picked me up in the car, and Amy and her husband were, like, peeking through the window. I felt like I was, they were my parents. And we both were dressed up, and I liked that. I liked that Mark was dressed up. And I loved the way he looked dressed up. And, you know, we drove to this wonderful inn, which had this beautiful restaurant on the water. And he remembered everything I ordered from the last. He listened. The whole evening, he nursed one drink. He nursed the scotch, never ordered another one, which I thought was interesting. So, again, we talked till the restaurant almost closed, and he drove me home. And we just gave, like, a little kiss on the cheek. And he said, do you want to do this again? And I said, I do. And he said, I'll come to Brooklyn. And I said, wow, great, you know, come to Brooklyn. So we made plans for him to come to Brooklyn. But, you know, the thing I loved about him, and I'm not an old-fashioned person, I never really understood the thing about the man opening the car door for you, but there was something lovely about it. When we got to the restaurant, it was a very cold night, and he backed up. He opened the door, he goes, go right inside. They're going to take care of you. I'm going to park the car. It's too cold for you to be walking around. And I was like, I could get used to this, you know? And when I went inside, I was immediately handed a drink. It was like he had set these very wonderful little things up ahead of time. And when he came back in, he wasn't wearing a coat. So he came back in, and the cold air was like wrapped around him. It was lovely. It was just this. And he said, can I hold your hand? And I said, yes. And we walked into the dining room together. So I was definitely, I'm not going to say falling in love, but I'm smitten by the excitement and the possibility of this man being in my life. So when we made the date for Brooklyn, I had to wait for a refrigerator. My refrigerator broke. And I said, I can't have you here waiting for a refrigerator. He goes, well, I've never done that before, and I think it'd be pretty exciting to be waiting for a refrigerator with you, because I love new experiences. And when he came, he had a gift for me, but it wasn't an over-the-top gift. It was a beautiful scarf that I could handle, because he also came with two bags of groceries, because he knew I was getting a refrigerator, and I would have food to begin with. My first reaction was, ooh, because it felt almost too much, these two. But he picked up on that, and he said, I don't have to bring these in. I'll bring them back to the car if I've overstepped. And I loved that, that he saw me and included that feeling, you know. So we spent the entire Thursday hanging out waiting for a refrigerator, which never came. But he ran out to buy sushi. Not knowing the neighborhood. I said, we can order it in. He said, no, I'll go. And I don't know why I liked his kind of like willing to go on an adventure in a neighborhood that he didn't know. And he came back with this huge sushi platter, which we ate all afternoon. And then we took this wonderful walk once we realized the refrigerator wasn't coming. And again, there was no, we kissed just goodbye. It wasn't like this big, you know, even though we were both feeling it, which was also lovely, not to just act on that.
That's awesome. So now you've had two dates, right?
Right.
Okay.
For long periods of time.
Uh-huh.
You know, plus my family knew it. You know, I felt like he wasn't a stranger. I didn't, you know. So when we were talking and we were deciding when we would see each other again, I said, how about I go to Connecticut, but I'll go into a hotel. I was thinking we can meet in New Haven, which is very easy for him to get to and easy for me. And I go to a hotel in New Haven. And if something were going to happen, we would have a place to go. And if nothing happened, I would be in. I never expected him to say, yes, let's go away together. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He goes, well, how about we go back to that hotel where we had dinner and their rooms are beautiful and I'll rent us a gorgeous room and we'll go there for the night. I said, I don't know, Mark. He goes, Gene, he goes, you'll be the leader. I'll follow your lead. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. He said, so, you know, please don't worry about it. If you just want to sleep, we'll just sleep. You know, so he made it very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very safe, even though people thought I was crazy for going away. But we were going in that direction anyway. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I had so much fun getting clothes ready. That was the real fun, you know, going shopping and packing makeup and, you know, like, do I shave anywhere? You know, how do I fix all this? You know, all of that stuff that has been, that was taken away from me.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And now I was finding it again. And the exciting fear of it, the exciting fear of this unknown thing that was destined to happen.
We'll be right back.
Relationships are hard, and that's why I'm here. Hey friend, it's Cammie Crawford. You may know me from my work on MTV's Catfish, and I hope you'll join me on my show, Relationship, the advice podcast that covers all relationship topics. It's a judgment-free zone, and nothing is off limits. Think of me as your big sister / audible BFF that you can always trust to give you the real tea. Listen and follow Relationship with Cammie Crawford, available now on the free Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
So even going by train there, and he kept texting me while I was on the train. So it was wonderful. You know, he said, are you nervous? Are you excited? And I said him everything. And he goes, me too. So that felt good. I get off the train in New Haven and I have a backpack and kind of an awkward suitcase that I keep saying I'm going to buy a new one and haven't yet. It's one of those drag behind you kind of things. I don't know if you've ever been to New Haven by train. It's a very long, awkward station. You walk a long way. And then you bang your suitcase up these steps. So it's old-fashioned and not comfortable. But so I get off the train and I'm heading down that long corridor. And I see him walking towards me. And he's wearing a white shirt and jeans. He looks lovely, but, and I can't put my finger on it. But there's something off about his walk. Mm. And I can't figure it out to myself. Mm. And then I think to myself, well, you never saw him walk from the distance. So maybe it's just one of those little flashing moments that go by that you don't think too much about.
Something about the energy coming through his body.
Yeah, it was a different energy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a definitely different energy. And when he came to me, we gave each other a hug and he held my hand, which made me walking even more difficult. So I'm holding his hand with a backpack and this crazy suitcase and he's making no move to take anything, no move to take my suitcase, which is a complete different person from the person that backed the car up, opened the door, had people waiting, you know. Like, okay. When we got to his car, he said, oh, I'm sorry. I should have taken your suitcase. So that kind of made me feel a little better. Like at least he was aware and maybe he was nervous. You know, I don't know him really that well. And so we get in the car. He begins to talk nonstop. Some story filled with a lot of details that I could barely follow about being pulled over by a cop for drunk driving. Well, first he's telling me the story while I'm driving with him.
While he's driving.
And you know, when I did get in the car, I thought I smelled liquor, but I wasn't sure. And sometimes people have that kind of breath. Mm. I mean, and it isn't. Mm. So I thought, oh, okay. But again, it was one of these moments you push away. And the way he was talking was different. He would say, oh, I'm talking so much. And he would switch the conversation to me, but not really. Mm. We'd go back to this conversation about drunk driving, how unfair the cop was. He wasn't really driving drunk. It was a whole thing, but he lost his license for 6 months. And then he was in a car with a monitor. And I was like, oh, boy. So we get to the inn. And he goes, we probably won't be able to check in, you know, until about 4 o'clock. And I said, okay. He goes, but, you know, let's go have some lunch. And I said, great. And I'm kind of settling myself. By this point, it's about 12. It's a very rainy, rainy, cold, miserable kind of day. Hot soup would have been really great. And I tell him I'm going to just wash up from the train. He goes, no worries, I'm going to order it. We came back and he had ordered for us. And it was this huge platter of shellfish, oysters and clams and shrimp. And while that was lovely, I didn't want to really eat shellfish at like 11:45 on a freezing. It wasn't what I was in the mood for. I mean, but I was very sweet. He remembered, you know. So I had that. He remembered I love shellfish. And so we sit and he orders wine for me, which is still early for me, but that's okay. So I have my wine. And he orders some kind of whiskey thing. And it's a big shot, you know. And he has no trouble finishing it very quickly. I'm like, whoa. So we hang out there. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, he is drinking a lot. But so far we're okay. But I'm still in this new place with him. And so the receptionist says, oh, you know, your room is ready. And he goes, our room is ready. And I'm like, oh, this is not turning me, oh.
You mean the way he said, our room is ready, like, was kind of creepy room. Or yeah. Weird?
It was like, he dangled the key, our room is ready. Oh, and I'm boy. Like, oh boy, oh boy. And he goes, and I have to keep track of the time, he goes, because I have a big surprise for you. And I'm like, oh boy. So we go up to the room and, you know, I'm kind of looking around. And the next thing I know, literally, I am on the bed and he is kissing me, but it's not like an enticing romantic slow. He's like kissing me and we're rolling and he's kissing me and we're rolling and we're rolling around this bed and his mustache is scraping against my lip and my lip is getting really sore and the kisses are awful. They're like open mouth kisses with nothing in the middle there. I'm like, what? And I'm like struggling to breathe while he's doing this and it's not like he's like going, oh, you're so beautiful and, you know, making me want to kiss him. It was not like he was making me want to kiss him. And I'm going, slow down. Like, you know, I'm trying to, and so he goes, you're right. And he sits, and he's looking at me like, isn't this really hot? And I'm like, well, this is really bad. But I'm not saying that. So now he grabs me again and now we're rolling some more and rolling. And I felt like I was exhausted. The whole thing was exhausting. And there was no move, like, to get undressed. Like, let's just do that then. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden he goes, time for your surprise. And I go, oh, boy. Okay, now my lips are completely red around my mouth, like from being scratched by his very stiff mustache. So it looks like I have some kind of chapped red thing going like a clown going,
right.
Like I did not look good.
Oh my
you
gosh.
Know?
Yeah.
And I'm like into this kind of like wanting to run away from, like, let me out of here to I'm gonna have sex. I have to have sex. Like I couldn't I, my goal had like I just you know it was in one of these moments of like, well, I haven't done this in 6 years and I haven't done this with anybody but my husband, so you know, how do I know? Maybe this is really...
There are those times when you end up having sexual chemistry with someone after you've had a lot of signs that you might not, and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not into this, and I'm not giving up on my hope that after 6 years, and I had to see if my body worked, you know, I had to. So the surprise was a massage, which I thought was great. So he walks me down to the massage thing, the spa, and the massage is lovely. And I begin to relax and I begin to think, okay, this is lovely. He did this. And I'm kind of very touched that he did this. And I'm beginning to say it's awkward for him too. Like he probably hasn't done this in a long, long time and feels he has to take the lead. So maybe I can switch this around. And it was so unlike me because I'm quick to judge sometimes, but I must have wanted sex so bad after 6 years that my judgment was getting bigger. Like I was leaving more room, more room. So I come out and I ask if I need to tip anybody and they go, no, this has been completely taken care of by the gentleman. And then he goes, that gentleman seems to be, was just pacing around here for the entire time that you were getting the massage. We finally told him to go to the bar.
Wow. Okay.
So I come out of the spa feeling this renewal energy of, this is going to be okay.
Right.
Well, he comes at me with this, again, one of these crazy, you have no idea. I went to look at the car while you were getting a massage and one of my tires was low. I drove all over in this town, couldn't find any air for my tires. And so finally the valet said that there's air right here, at the inn. And like he said, do you believe I did that? And I'm looking at him like, oh no. Okay, we have to get this back. And I said, well, ask me about my massage. You know, like, oh, that's right. Oh, yes. How was your massage? And I go, it was wonderful. It was great. Thank you. I feel really good. Thanks. So he's kind of like realizing that he's got to let go of whatever place he's in. But I also know he's been at a bar drinking. And I'm thinking, wow, he's been drinking all day, all day. And we're not talking about like a glass of wine or, real hard stuff.
Right. And you felt like he had started, like by the time you were meeting him on the train station, you felt like he might have already had one.
Yeah. Okay. So we go up into the hotel room. Now I've brought along all my sexiest dresses and nightgowns and all of this stuff. And he says, you probably have to take a shower or something. After a massage. I said, I do. That would be great. Thank you. So I go in to take a shower. Now, these are very intimate things to do with someone that you really don't know that well, taking a shower. And I wanted the privacy of that shower, And he knocks on the door and he says, do you mind if I come in to pee? Which I also thought was, because he's not a baby. He could have waited until I came out of the shower, but I said, sure. He comes into the bathroom, stark staring naked. And I was not prepared for him to be naked. And he has the biggest. It was porno movie worthy. More than porno movie. I kept thinking, deep throat. It was more than porno movie. It came like, and he's a big man. He's like 6'2". So this is big. And I'm like, not that. I'm thinking, where am I going to fit that thing? Like, how is that even going to be possible? I mean, and now I'm in the shower completely freaking out. Completely. I'm looking at my pussy like, what could you do? And I'm like, I'm freaking out. And I'm like, and he's humming. That's another thing. He hums randomly, no tunes, just random humming. So he's like, and he's wiggling while he's peeing. He clearly wants me to see this thing somehow. And I'm just taking a long shower.
The shower is getting longer.
The shower is getting longer, and I'm like, okay, so, you've never seen anything quite like this, and you're going to do this. So I come out, and I'm so relieved to see him getting dressed. And he says, we have a 6:30 reservation for dinner.
So confusing.
So I go, okay, and so I begin to get dressed in the bathroom. I needed some kind of privacy here because he was So when I come out in the bathroom, he said, that dress looks very nice. And I go, oh, okay, because this is what you want as a woman, as anybody. You know, woo me a little. So he goes, that dress looks very nice, but it would look much better crumpled up on the floor somewhere. So he, again, begins that thing that he began with me before of the rolling and the thing. And and this time, though, I just stop him. I stop him. I go, whoa, stop. And at first he gets like, what do you mean? Like, and I said, you tell me I could take the lead. He said, you're right. I said, that's what you said to me. But now I kind of want to get the evening over with. Like, I know we're heading into this this moment.
Yeah.
But the excitement of the buildup has kind of like, I mean, I'm almost exhausted from this. So we go to dinner, and I know we look like this wonderful couple, and because everyone is smiling at us. And I thought that was interesting, too, like how we look at couples, what may be happening with that couple. And how I began when my husband left to envy couples. You know, I envied couples. And I felt like my status as a couple was taken away by his leaving. So now here I am, the couple. And he was also treating me like a wife of 25 years rather than a new lover.
Right.
The first time I was at the restaurant, I had the steak when we were with my family. Then when we went out on our date, he remembered that. But I didn't particularly feel like steak the third time, which he ordered for me. And said something like, she'll thank me for this or something. And that kind of assumption is kind of like, it was very old-time husband-wife kind of stuff. And when that clicked, it was like the disappointment was major for me at that point even because I was looking forward to not falling in love, but feeling that adventure of sex again and that excitement again. And suddenly that was not what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, and I had this image of myself in this new pretty velvet dress. And then, of course, on our second drink, as we're drinking, I said something like, I don't know how Trump came up.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no.
Now, everybody in my family warned me that he may be into Trump because Connecticut is pretty Trump. He's lived there all his life. And so they wanted me to find a companion so badly that my family, who are communists, who are left on the left, who on the left are saying to him, if he's a little Trump, it's okay. He's a little Trump. And I said to him, what's a little Trump? What's a little Trump? And they go, well, like, if he's a little Trump, like he thinks he's going to help the economy, that's a little Trump. But if he thinks that, you know, Biden lost the election and he won, that's big Trump. That's no. But a little Trump. So at that point, I could not ask him if he thought Biden won the election because I couldn't. I just couldn't. So he goes, do you not like me anymore? And he was very cute with that. Then he became cute again. I said, no, it's fine. I said, but we shouldn't talk politics. He goes, absolutely not. Let's not talk politics. Because I didn't want to know if he was a little Trump or a big Trump.
Uh-huh.
It was hard enough for me even that he was a little Trump.
Right.
But I was going to have sex no matter what. And I just was going to do this. I had to do this. So we go back up into the room. And he has a bottle of champagne. And he begins to play some music on his phone. Frank Sinatra, who I don't actually love.
I actually don't either. It's an unpopular opinion.
I don't love him, but it was music. And for the first time, he asked me about my storytelling, which he never asked me about. I realized that. You know, he did when we were waiting for the refrigerator, but he never even asked, can I listen to one of your stories?
That makes me crazy.
Right?
Yeah. It's like, you put all of this effort into a craft, and the craft is literally about sharing the most meaningful things that have happened in your life and what your psyche made of it all. And when people you're starting to get close to show no interest in actually hearing those stories, I'm like, Okay, I mean, but it seems to be pretty universal.
But it's hard because
it's very hard. I've learned your fans are your fans, and your friends and family don't give a jack shit about what you do.
I know, and it was, but I would think that if you're just wanting to become someone's lover, and this
maybe yes.
you would want to. Of You'd want to know everything.
I would.
I want to know everything. I was asking him everything about himself. Anyway, I knew everything because I wanted to.
Yeah.
I wanted to. So finally, the moment happens. But it doesn't happen the way I imagine. You know, I imagine myself dancing for him and doing a whole, no, we're back on that throwing in the bed again. So we're like, but this time I knew we're going to be throwing. And
it's going to be a lot of rolling around, a lot of rolling and a lot of beard burn on your mouth.
And yeah, and the fact that he was a terrible kisser, and I got mad at myself. I thought, you should have tested that out in Brooklyn when he was at your house. I didn't, and yeah. I should have. You need to test out how people kiss.
It's a friend of mine recently posted, like, can people be taught to be good kissers? You know what I mean? Because, again, that's one of those things with me where it's just like, it's so, like, essential. It's the bare essentials.
It is. It's the beginning of you wanting to unfold to someone, wanting to release
and
yourself.
So many people are just not good kissers.
And I thought to myself, is it because I'm so old school that so much of my sex life began with kissing? Because kissing was all you could do sometimes.
Right.
So the allure of that, it could be more sexual than actually intercourse.
Yeah, some people consider it maybe the most intimate thing.
Yeah.
And so that they're a little bit more uptight about it than other things.
Yeah. Yeah, like, so I know that his thing is, like, so big. And I know, like, will it come out my mouth? Like, I was, like, all the way up in there. Like, I had no idea.
Have you seen it erect at this
point?
Well,
I was scared to see it erect. I felt it erect, which kind of, like, you know, like, it was like an arm, my whole arm. Like, I mean, you know. So I actually was the one that inserted his penis, and I was like, wow, it's going in. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think I was so thrilled that my body remembered.
Mm.
And so we began having sex, and I was thrilled. And I felt like we were finding a page with each other. And I thought, okay, so this is really good. And then he pulled out.
Mm.
I said, what's happening here? What's happening? Like a whisper.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, you know, and I don't know what he was doing. It wasn't like he was just kind of rubbing against me and rubbing against me. And then he would come back in and do the same thing where we were going someplace. We're going, and it's very unnerving to have your whole body be, you know, so we're reaching somewhere, and then he pulled out again.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like he's taking you to the edge and pulling back, or trying not to come himself or something. Yeah,
whenever.
He's not in your flow,
right? And so at one point when he pulls out, he goes to go down on me, and I stop him. And he says, why? Do you have problems? And I said, no, I don't have problems. I have some boundaries, though, and I'm not ready for that.
Mm.
And then with that, he kind of got up, pulled himself up directly over me, and I was like, what's going to happen now? Like, I'm looking at this big man. And he just collapses right on top of me, dead asleep.
Oh my God.
Dead asleep. And I'm thinking I'm going to die. I'm really sure that I'm going to die. I'm completely sure I'm going to die. And I don't know what to do. And I think all those years of keeping my apartment neat and going to sleep in little nightgowns so that my family would find me in my bed like little Mother Teresa. And now they're going to find me under a 6'2" guy with an 8-foot cock. And it's like, how? I can't be. I can't die under him. I can't. And with all my might, I pulled and twisted and I pushed and finally he rolled over. I was like, and I just jumped out of bed and ran and put on my clothes and I was wide awake and thinking, what just happened? But I was so grateful to be alive just because it was such dead weight. And I really, the thought of being found, you know, in a hotel room with this guy was just...
Totally. And he was so big and you feel trapped underneath
him. Trapped and suffocating, like I was suffocating underneath him. So then my daughter, I see, has sent me like 5 or 6 texts. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And finally, I just said, Amy, I'm fine. Sorry I didn't answer your text. I said, it has to be probably one of the worst nights of my life, but I'm safe. I'm not in danger. Uh-huh. And I really should, I'm going to come and get you. I'm 20 minutes away. Be downstairs. Get your suitcase. I'm going to come get you. And, you know, it's pouring rain. It's a terrible night. He's asleep. I didn't just want to escape like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't. And in my mind, I knew it was about the drinking.
Yeah.
I knew it.
When you got to that part in the story, it was your first date, and you said he was really nursing
that one drink.
I feel like that was a very deliberate choice to keep himself from clicking off and going off the edge and doing what he really would prefer to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that he had a whole weekend with me, he felt he could handle it.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like traveling with friends sometimes too, how when you travel with friends and you have extended periods of time to be with one another, where the little minutiae of like taking care of this and taking care of that has to be done, where you can start to like get really annoyed with people.
Right.
So you can see how when there's this date that's going to involve a couple of days of being in this inn together, that the cracks really started to show quite quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so I'm up all night. I was supposed to have therapy the next morning, and I thought that I could have it do a FaceTime kind of thing with my therapist.
And when in the hotel.
And when I mentioned that to Mark, he didn't understand the need for privacy. So I sent a text to my therapist saying, you know, Bill, this isn't going to work. And I said, I'm in a strange situation. So he texts back right away. He goes, are you safe?
Yeah.
Are you safe? And I said, I'm safe. He goes, don't have therapy with me. Go get on that train. Like, he's just like, get on the train. So the next morning, we both were up early, and Mark says to me, let's go find some breakfast. And I said, great. And we realized nothing would be open yet. I said, I'm going to take a shower. And he goes, okay, I'll bring your bags down. But we're not talking about the night. And I was even wondering in my mind if he even remembered exactly what happened. Mm. So I take this quick shower, and when I come down, he's at the bar asking why it's not open yet.
Mm.
And I said to Mark, and he was very argumentative with this woman, I said, Mark, it's only 7 o'clock. Mm. Bars don't open at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed very anxious, you know. So we drove to a diner. Not once did we talk about the night. And I didn't bring it up, but I had to find out if he was a little chump or Big Trump.
Oh,
So we're at the diner and we're having breakfast, and he's telling me a lot of bizarre kind of stories. And I just said, let me ask you something. You know, I just have to ask you one thing. And he goes, what? I said, do you believe that Biden lost the election? And he goes, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Trump won that election. And I said, wow. I said, you really do believe that? He goes, I really do.
Oh,
and then
my
I was
gosh.
Like, you know, I said, you know, we can head to New Haven now because you've got to go and I got to go. And I mean, he knows obviously something's wrong, but we're not going there.
Right.
And we get to the train station at New Haven and, you know, he goes to give me a hug. And I kind of did a kiss on the cheek kind of thing. And he pulls out of his pocket his hotel room key. He goes, do you still have yours? You know, like this.
The memories of the keys.
The memories. I said, I don't know. And, you know, I ran down that hallway to catch the first train that was going out of New Haven to New York. On the train, first I was filled with real sadness about just the loss, you know, the loss. But then I was also filled with real joy of myself. And I said, you are a real little hot ass. You are. You not only didn't have sex for 6 years, but then when you do, it's with an 8-foot cup. I mean, what could be better than that? I mean, I may never have sex again, but I know I will never have sex again with something like that. Because it just, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and I think that's, you know, first when telling the story to girlfriends, they kept pushing me to make him wrong or bad or a rapist or a, and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. This is not a story about a terrible man. This is a story about an inept lover for whatever reasons, drinking primarily. But it's also a story about me as a 76-year-old woman wanting to define myself sexually, not willing to say, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are so many ways, like just telling this story, you're owning that, you know. There are ways of, like, for example, my sex life has changed so much since my divorce when I was 40, because over the years, I've learned, oh, you would never be attracted to you, Kevin. But a lot of people are attracted to an older, bearish guy who has a lot of experience around kinky stuff and can mentor people and coach and all that kind of thing. And so over the years, I've like more and more owned that. And so that when I'm rejected, I just say, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I really mean it nowadays of just being like, okay, you don't want what I have to offer. No problem. I'm looking for people for whom it would really click because I know that I know how to have fun.
Right. Exactly. And I think the whole idea of sexuality, I was thinking like even the moment of orgasm, that scary moment when you're, and it's almost painful but wonderful, and you almost want to go there, but you don't, but you do. Mm-hmm. That's very hard for a lot of people.
And a lot of people, you mean, get uptight or whatever, and can't come.
They can't come there. Mm-hmm. And I think that my fear over the 6 years of not having that experience, you know, obviously I masturbate, but with another person it's very different because you're mutually, you know, exposed that way.
Yeah.
So the fear that I would have forgotten all that, the fear that I no longer had a body that welcomed it, and then finding out I do.
Of course.
And it was such a gift.
Yeah.
You know, my family was so devastated by this, but they were thinking, I don't ever want to have a marriage. I don't want that traditional life anymore. Mm-hmm. Even though my traditional life was somewhat untraditional, I still don't want that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I want, but what I do know is I'm exploring and I'm not dead.
That's amazing. I love it.
And my best friend Marla goes, could you stop saying you had to have sex? She couldn't even handle me saying that. I said, why? She said, because it's just like you want a boyfriend. I said, not necessarily. You know? And that's why a little Trump was okay. I was so happy I didn't find out he was a big Trump.
Well, that's another thing is that people also really want sex to be, you know, to fit into a little definition of their own. Like, no, you want a boyfriend or whatever it might be, you know, to realize that, no, you've had enough experience of exploring at different points in your life to know that you're still exploring and you can define what you want sex to be.
Exactly. When I discovered that my husband had been having copious affairs throughout our marriage, so he was actually living a life that I knew nothing about, you know, nothing about. So I only had one man. And when I thought that, I got angry. I really got angry that instead of him saying, let's open our marriage because this is what I'm doing. How do you feel about that?
Right.
Or I need to leave because I know you want this. He kept this thing going and I believed it. And now suddenly here I am without the couple status, having on my own to realize you, from the time you were 29, only had sex with this one man for 41 years, 42 years. And to explore not just other men, maybe other women, but to explore who I am now. It's a hard, because I'm an unusual 76-year-old. Mm-hmm. I know that.
Yeah.
And I'm not on medications. So when I find even a friend who could take a walk down the block without going, and I don't mean to be, but at 76, your body changes.
Yeah.
And so 76-year-old men are just not where I am.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, there's always that, too. There's right. always going a little younger with them.
Yeah. And it was fun, too, knowing what do I want now in my marriage? It was what would make him happy.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, you know, and I may never have sex again. And maybe that will be okay with me,
mm-hmm.
because that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep exploring.
Well, you know, this is a perfect example here of how so much experience can be had just from the exploring. You know what I mean? Because this story, yes, there are parts of it that are almost nightmarish, right? But there are other parts of it that are really fun and exciting and interesting. And so, I mean, it was a whole kind of roller coaster of an experience. Like, sitting on this couch that we're sitting on a few years ago, a fella came over for a play date, and we had negotiated on a kink site about him coming over here, but he wasn't making eye contact with me when we first sat down to chat. And I got the impression, okay, maybe he just wanted to jump right into the sex, which a lot of people want to do. But I was just like, kept trying to converse about some stuff and things were not quite clicking.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, maybe we'll click physically once we're actually having sex. And indeed, it was electrifying. It was crazy how much we connected in some ways. But he became crazy the next day. Like, on my profile was the fact that I'm polyamorous.
Right.
And I brought that up in our conversation, too, just to make sure
we all understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, okay, I get that.
Right.
But the next day, he was like, who are you with? Are you seeing? And he started asking me about, he started demanding things about these other guys. I was like, I haven't even told you about other guys. So he like almost immediately went completely crazy about me and then became a stalker. But the point is, it's so hard to know because people are so nuanced and have so much chemistry that you actually do have to kind of make mistakes sometimes or have connections that look like they're going to work in this or that way and then don't in other ways. Because in this story, you and your family were making sure that you were at least feeling pretty safe, that you had agency
You know, it's funny because in therapy, you know, when Bill wanted to know every detail about what happened, he said, for 6 years now, I've gone through the different men that you've met, and you always said no when you weren't safe. So you felt safe. And you don't have to second guess that. And you are safe because here you are. I think we're all in such a frenzy, politically, socially, emotionally, that we think right away, someone's going to rape me. You're crazy for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I was safe at the hotel at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
I could have left. Uber, you know, I mean, even if Amy wasn't there, you know, I had agency. I was making choices all the way along because I didn't want to run away from myself.
Yeah.
I would never have come to peace with it if I had gotten that far and just left.
You know, there's two things also that alcohol does a lot of the time. One is you get to see a more unfiltered version of that person.
Right.
Two, it takes a person often a little bit more inside themselves, right, so that they might not be as attentive to connecting with you. And so before it was, what was that, date number three?
Yes.
Yeah. So by date number three, you dodged a bullet.
And that's what I felt good about, too, because this could have gone on and I could have gotten involved with him and then had a more difficult time extracting myself.
Yeah.
You know, he said to me when I got home, there was a text from him and he said, "We need to talk. There are some things I want to talk to you about." And I thought about that. Do we need to talk? Do I need to give him some closure? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, and this has only come from living alone for 6 years, I don't owe this man anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote back saying, "I don't think we need to talk. I think we both know this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
But I do wish you all the best, and I do wish you whatever I've said." Mm-hmm. And he let it go. Mm-hmm. He let that be, which I was very grateful for.
Yeah.
Because he had to know. Even because he knew how much he drank.
Yeah,
we do
yeah.
know those things.
Right, right, right. Even if he blacked out, he knows.
I think he did black out.
Didn't go.
I think
all that well.
I think that collapse was like, you know, and the fact that I could, I mean, that was the most dangerous part. I really.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad that you're still exploring, still coming up with your own definitions.
Important. You know, people always say age is just a number, but they put that number on you.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm so tired of that. Or I will literally have people say to me, "Gene, why did you stop dyeing your hair?" And I said, "Because people know my age, whether I dye my hair or not."
Right, yeah.
And, you know, the moment I decided to stop dyeing my hair was, well, it was right before he left, but I was in Fairway, I think, and there I am with my $300 dark hair with the blonde highlights and the whole thing, and I'm checking interest, and, you know, on Tuesdays, there's a senior discount. Fuck this. You just have dark hair on an older body. Everyone knows you're dyeing your hair.
Right.
So it was coming into my own. I mean, I still have times I think maybe I'll dye it. But it will be because I want to dye it. And
yeah.
That I've had that experience of all of that.
It
know?
Is funny that I feel like when you're younger, when you're in your 20s or 30s, say, people, the world, society has more of an attitude of you're finding yourself, you're carving out your niche. But in your older years, people will look at a more idiosyncratic person like myself or you, say, and be like, "He didn't want to have kids? Like, right. Doesn't he?" You know, people are like, "Why haven't you moved back to Cincinnati and gotten a husband and started to have kids and all these things?" And it's just like, well, because I have always just created my own path. And it has not necessarily been easy. You
right.
know, I mean,
right.
there's been a lot of struggle to kind of put my life together the way I want. And I think that when you get to a certain age and people have expectations of what a person in their 50s, 60s, 70s should be like, or what their life should look like, I think that a lot of us need to own a lot more of, for example, like Maude mm-hmm. in Harold and
yes.
Maude.
Yeah.
Or like people talk about Carl Jung as after his mental breakdown in his middle age, people said he just became totally delightful as an old man,
yeah.
that he was just so spontaneous and unpredictable and more fun. And I'm like, I like that idea.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That idea. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And that is that. I'll tell you, it is so fun to hear Gene's perspective. You know, just last night from when I'm recording this right here, right now, a fella came over and surprised me by revealing that he's straight, basically. And he just wanted to experiment for the first time having sex with a man. Now, I hadn't played with someone who was more or less straight
since 1986, I think. So this fella is Arab and from a very conservative upbringing. And I'll tell you, we ended up talking for 2 hours after we played. And the conversation was all about trying things outside the box. I was so impressed with him and how he really prioritizes this philosophy he has of trying things outside the box. Definitely a, you know, type A kind of person who puts his philosophy to the test. But I was so glad we had such an epic chat after playing. Because I was so thrown off by his revelation in the beginning of the evening that I feel I did not at all do a good job in the bedroom. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be using good, you know, qualifiers or whatnot. But I was definitely very awkward because I feel like we were both kind of like deer in the headlights. But we were able to talk about all of that afterward, too. So at 54, I am amazed to still be discovering so many different kinds of sexual experience, including times I'm not at my best. But we both agreed that the whole evening was fascinating. Now, if you came into this episode not knowing who Jean Ann LeBeck is, there is her beautiful story about the women's movement in the 1970s, during which she had her first lesbian relationship. That story is called Butterfly Kiss. Then there was the story America for Us, about how when Jean was a little girl, her parents were raided one night by the FBI. I'm not spoiling it too much by saying that. There's big surprises in that story. And her solo show, The Last to Know, is also about a big surprise when Jean discovered her husband of decades was having multiple epic affairs all along the way and gaslighting her. I remember Jean at that time telling me we could have been polyamorous, but he was all about the gaslighting. Oh my God, life is a trip, folks. And you can find Jean Ann LeBeck on Instagram at Jean LeBeck. Folks, let us know what you think of this third kind of story format we're doing now, this conversational style, at the Risk Podcast Fans Discussion Group on Facebook, or over at our subreddit, Risk Podcast, or you can just email me directly at kevin@risk-show.com. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.